Chicago's sports conversation is now.
Especially coming back home, no better way to live my dream as a kid. Thank you for the Bulls organization for taking a chance on me.
The Beat.
There was no butterflies. I was able to sleep. I was actually, you know, ready to go early.
You know, it's day one, and I was out there at practice, and I got to hit other guys, and that was fun.
Eloy Jimenez with his second AAA home run.
On 720 WGN.
Well, 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 if it isn't the Beat. Wow, Harry Tynowitz, it's been a long time, buddy.
It has. Happy to be on the Beat. We've got the Beat with you till 6:30. Then White Sox Weekly, the show you wait for every Saturday, taking you up to Sox baseball. Andy Major, 8:35, and then Fermio and DJ have the action. Carl, we can do whatever we want for 2.5 hours right here on the Beat. There's so many things on my mind, sports, movies, romance. Stay away from the old political forum. What would you like to open with?
I was actually listening to you talk there, Harry. I'm curious, what's the number one thing on your mind? I have a lot on my mind as well. I'm just curious, what's number one? Because as I was sitting here preparing for the show today, going through all sorts of stuff, there's a zillion different ways to go as far as the open of the program goes. So let's have a nice, I personally want to celebrate Jesse Chavez, the newest addition to your Chicago Cubs. You might not know who Jesse Chavez is out there, and that's okay.
How can you not know who Jesse Chavez is?
Well, you know, that's a good point. Our listeners are very well-educated on Jesse Chavez, who at one point in his life was a 39th round draft pick, Harry, as you know.
Mm-hmm. By?
2001, straight out of high school, by the Chicago Cubs. He said, no, I am not going to be a 39th round pick. I am going back to college. I'm going to college. I'm going to learn something and work on my baseball. So he went to Riverside Community College, which is one of the better community colleges out there. Nothing wrong with the community college. Look, I should have done that myself to start my academic career on the college level because I didn't deserve to go to a 4-year university with the performance that I had at Highland Park High School. Minor tangent to start the show here. But he went to Riverside Community College, RCC, I believe as it's called, the RCC.
You know me, yeah. RCC.
Is Oakton Community College OCC?
You know me, OCC.
Right, so he went to RCC for a year, and he went from a 39th round pick. He zoomed up, hard to do, from 39 to the 42nd round.
Would you say he zoomed down?
That would be a crawl down, actually.
Yeah.
And so here's a guy.
Now I understand why you thought maybe you shouldn't have gone to that 4-year program.
Right. Now here's a guy who's been a Pirate, a Brave, a Royal, an A, a Dodger, a Ranger.
A pauper, a poet, a pawn, and a king.
He's made his way around the majors, and now he's a Chicago Cub, and he pitched 2 innings today, and the Cubs beat the Cardinals in game one, as Bob Kessler just told you doing the outstanding news report that a Kessler always gives you on a Saturday afternoon. He pitched 2 innings today in the Cubs' 7-2 win. Bob, by the way, I can see him picking up his headphones. He only really wants to talk about Bump Wills, so I don't know if he knows anything about
he loves that story.
He does.
I like Bump. Well,
do you know anything?
The Sox station, I like the Law Brothers, Vance and Rudy.
Right.
In the 80s.
Those are two great White Sox, and White Sox Weekly at 6:30. Right. And the Sox
we'll
are.
Wait till then, all right.
No, we could talk Sox at any point. That's fine. Do you know anything about Jesse Chavez there, Mr. Kessler?
No.
Yeah. Okay. My point in bringing it up.
Yes, he's a wonderful athlete, by the way. And he's never allowed a base runner as a Cub pitcher.
Right. Is that true? He didn't allow any base runners today?
Okay. Six up, six down.
And he got some great play in the field behind him. He actually deflected one ball off his mitt.
Because he's a great athlete.
He was a very active guy on the bump, and there was Ben Zobrist behind him to take the deflected ball and throw out a Cardinal base runner. But my point in bringing it up here,
yes,
because it is slightly tongue-in-cheek, you know, the L.A. Dodgers, who have won the NL West 5 years in a row, but they haven't won a World Series in 30 years since the Kirk Gibson era.
Mm-hmm.
That's Harry's That's the duck sound. That could be a good sounder for a thing. The Harry Tynowitz phone duck sounder.
Yeah, maybe we should pick another animal just for today.
You know, oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry. And for real, like, that's one of the worst stories ever. The duck boat accident.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrible.
Our hearts go out to them.
It does. And you know, cherish your loved ones. And if you haven't seen the story, I'm sure you have, but if you haven't, it's just an awful boating accident. But, rewinding back to the playpen that is sports, the Dodgers go out and get Manny Machado, who was the all-star starting second baseman for the Baltimore for the American League.
Yes, or shortstop.
Yeah. Second?
Yeah, it's okay.
Shortstop, right, of course. And
it proves my point. You hate middle infielders.
My point is this. Why does California seem to get everything? LeBron James goes to the L.A. Lakers. Manny Machado goes to the L.A. Dodgers. Manny Ramirez went to the L.A. It just
20 years ago. You don't think Chicago's gotten anybody in the last 20 years?
Like, okay. Tell me what primetime guy, other than the
Marian Hossa in the last 20 years. Look at who the Blackhawks alone got. Marian Hossa came to this team, and four Stanley Cups later...
Okay, Marian.
Three Stanley Cups later.
Marian Hossa is a nice, great. Is a very solid additional part. It's not getting the best player in basketball. It's not getting.
Marian Hossa was one of the. I mean, he had been in two straight Stanley Cup finals.
You're gonna line me up, Marian Hossa.
I'm saying Marian Hossa is not LeBron, but Marian Hossa is nothing to sneeze at.
That's fine. There's and okay, not anything to sneeze at. But I'm talking about the prime time. Big guy. It just, they have such an advantage in California. Look at all the stars around us. Look at the weather around here. Look, there's Magic. Look, there's Kareem. Look, there's,
why don't you just sing I Love LA?
Well, but there is part of me, I think there's part of, like, literally every Chicagoan out there, correct me if I'm wrong here, 312-981-7200, that actually wants to live in California and live in that weather and live that life of seeing the stars every day and paying $15 for a bagel because you're in California and you get to see the ocean and you get to see the mountains and you get to see the pretty girls and you get to see the rich boys, the whole thing. That you don't feel like you don't feel just a little bit jealous there, Harry, of the West Coast?
I don't feel jealous of the West Coast. No, I mean, I feel jealous that they got ladies there. They got some fine looking women there, but we got fine looking women in Chicago. Just our women we only see in the summer.
Right, that's the other thing. Well, you know,
weather's better in Los Angeles.
How many, you know the Bulls once tried to get? Kobe Bryant stayed in Los Angeles. You know who the Bulls also have tried to get? LeBron James went to Miami. Uh-huh. Nice weather down there. Went to L.A. Bulls not even sniffing around. They don't deserve. They have enough. Enough with the Manny Machado.
Where did Allen Robinson go? He didn't go to the Rams or the Chargers.
Allen Robinson?
Yeah.
We're talking to Adam Hoge, who, of course, covers the Bears for WGN Radio at 4:35.
Jabari Parker, where'd he go?
Right, right. They get LeBron, we get Jabari. And
it's okay.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I like Jabari. I'm happy he came home. I love his story out of Simeon. I love the way he supports.
How many Mr. Basketballs did he win?
Who cares?
I mean, who cares?
Jabari is a nice, could have been a star in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Now hopefully he will be.
Maybe he still will be. If he can come off those two injuries,
right?
If
he can be the first guy in the history of basketball to have two ACL tears on the same knee and be super successful, I'm not saying he won't be a nice contributory player who will give you a good solid 15 to 20 points a night, but he's not going to be LeBron. By the way, Vincent Goodwill on the show at 6:05 as we continue to go through the topics. I just got a little bit of LA jealousy going on here, Harry. That's what I wanted. You know, they get Manny Machado. We get Jesse Chavez. Now the Cubs have a World Series. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers don't, which is sweet, and I'd like to you know, keep that out there. Well, but there's just something about California getting everything that doesn't sit well with me.
Machado one bothers me more than LeBron.
Because
the Bulls are not the leading candidate to represent the Eastern Conference in the championship, whereas the Cubs are the leading candidate to represent the National League in the World Series. Now you have Machado going into the Dodgers, who lost their star shortstop, who lost Kyle Seager, and now they've got Manny Machado, maybe the best shortstop in all of baseball, to replace him with. So they don't care that they gave up five guys, one of which is a stud, to get Machado. They care now that many people consider them the favorite to win the league.
Right, but the only reason why the Dodgers were able to do that, give up five guys to get Manny Machado, is because they know, as LA, as a huge market with seemingly an endless bank account, they can line up to pay him. That's why for the Cubs, we got to pay Chris Bryant. Even the rich Cubs, we got to pay Chris Bryant. We got to pay Anthony Rizzo. We've got Javi Baez. We have an endless list of guys, young, talented players, that they have to pay, which is a good problem,
Isn't
by the way.
Isn't it great that we don't need any of these guys, that we've already got them?
They could use Manny Machado. Come on. Find a spot for them. But they can't afford them. And the Milwaukee Brewers.
As we speak, by the way, the Cubs are 3.5 games up in first place, the highest they've been up the entire season.
Right. And the Milwaukee Brewers, which is a phenomenal city. I love Milwaukee.
It's one of my favorite suburbs of Chicago.
Right. Great suburb of Chicago. Love going up to Miller Park.
Just don't hang with Josh Hader.
I enjoy going to seeing the Bucks play. I support Milwaukee greatly.
I can't wait to see that new stadium.
Yeah, I support it to the point that like the Brewers deserve a shot at Manny Machado and getting over their hump in a what's fair and equitable game than the Dodgers.
But right, when the Brewers get a big ad at the trading deadline, yeah. Like CeCe Sabathia.
Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200. Am I the only one here with LA jealousy? Because, you know, LeBron, by the way, he's trying to win another championship or two so he can continue to cement that legacy. He didn't go to a team that's ready to win. He went out to LA because, you know, that's where the stars are. That's the cool place to be. And I respected that, by the way. But it's still like the Lakers, after having Kobe and Magic and Kareem and Wilt, like they deserve to get LeBron. That's what their fandom deserves. How about this? Every billboard out in LA, not everyone, but all these LeBron murals are popping up, and they are putting graffiti on the murals because they don't even want LeBron because they're Kobe fans out there.
It bothers me more that Boogie Cousins is going, you know, the Kevin Durant route, and all the superstars are loading up on Golden State.
That's a whole nother conversation. I actually think he could be the one reason why Golden State doesn't win. Boogie Cousins can cause issues with your chemistry. Hey, Denise in Brookfield, you got a thought on this California thing?
I sure do. You know, you can have the greatest team in the world out there in L.A. and Oakland, San Diego, but you take a look at those games on television. There's nobody at the stadium.
Exactly.
There's nobody there.
Exactly.
Nobody goes to see those games because you know why? You're in California. You can do a million other things besides go to the games. You got to admit, the Cubs draw the biggest crowd. Okay, maybe the stadium's smaller. But you can pack the Cubs games even when they're terrible. People go see them. But out in L.A., baseball is the last thing on their mind, only when they're in the championships. And even then, nobody's in the stands until about the third inning.
Right.
Because they're stuck in traffic.
Right, but they show up in the third, leave in the seventh, and players still want to go there because it's California, it's sunny. They don't care. Nobody cares about the traffic. Nobody cares about the smog. Nobody cares about anything. Thank you, Denise. I appreciate it. It's a very good point, Harry, right? Those fans don't deserve it. That's an even better way to go, Denise. Way to bring that to light.
They do leave early.
They're terrible fans. Great, they're decent basketball fans.
I hate the Cardinals and I hate the Packers, but you have to appreciate their fan base. Their fan bases are phenomenal.
Phenomenal fans. Hey, 100 events, 19 days, one epic food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate Chicago food experience of this August. We can do a little bit more on this. We'll talk Bears at the bottom here with Adam Hogue. I think I have found out the key, Harry. The key to the Cubs season. if it's going to end up the way Cub fans want it to end up. Can we talk about that next? Are you down?
I'd love to talk about that.
All right. Quick timeout. This is The Beat, 720 WGN.
Rolling down Imperial Highway. Big nasty.
So, like, if... Oh, no. If you were offered right now, Harry Tynowitz,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity to move out to Los Angeles.
Is it with you?
Nah, I don't get to go. You get to go by yourself.
I don't want it.
Really? You're staying?
I'm staying.
100%?
Yeah, it's the Carmen Harry show. Carmen Harry together all the way.
All right, Carmen Harry LA, that doesn't work. You're just local?
No, I mean, I'll go somewhere if you're going.
Okay. So if they go, Carmen Harry... We're gonna give you a overnight slot in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. That'd really put the pressure on the big wigs here, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. they wouldn't know what to do. It would be a whole issue. My guess,
yes,
is that you'd be like, all right, let's do it. Let's get that sweet sunshine.
Look. Los Angeles, I feel so differently about L.A. than New York. New York is like the most exciting place in the world, but you can't be there for more than, you know, a week. L.A., you could be there a month, but you'll, like, lose track of time. Have I been here a month? Have I been here 3 days? Have I been here 50 days? I mean, I lost a contact lens in Los Angeles. I went into the store. They're like, go wait with those other people. I'm like, where are the other people waiting? There's like asleep. They're asleep in the waiting room. They sack out on the couch. Different vibe. Carm, Chicago's the best city in the world. I want to stay here. I'd like to stay here. So, you know, given a choice, I would stay.
If you're just joining the program right now, we're just talking about how...
Carm has L.A. envy.
I do. The Lakers go out and get LeBron. The Dodgers get Manny Machado. I do. You know who I don't have envy for is the Washington Nationals, who got rid of my guy, Dusty Baker, who gets a rough ride, and they are in third place.
Yeah, and they got star pitchers yelling at each other last night.
And now you got Scherzer, Max Scherzer, and Steven Strasburg having a fight in the dugout, and former Cubs bench coach Dave Martinez telling everybody that's all right.
If I were in LA,
it might be.
If I were in LA, I would go see Jimmy Kimmel. That'd be cool. I like Kimmel.
Yeah, okay. All right. I like Kimmel, too. I like all the... there's a million things to like about being in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, in Munster, Indiana, you got L.A. negatives for us?
Yeah, I got a couple for you, Carm. I appreciate you taking my call. How about we don't have to deal with the wildfires?
Uh-huh.
Or at least so far we haven't. And, you know, for the longest time
Wait. What do you mean so far? Where do you see wildfires breaking out in Chicagoland?
I just hope that, you know, it doesn't. You know, my dad's got a place on the East Coast, and it's all wooded. And, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I just think there are people with matches or something that just do the wrong thing.
Okay.
Anyway, the other thing is we don't have to worry about, at least I don't think we have to worry about, the tectonic plates shifting in the Illinois area and Chicago falling off into Lake Michigan like they've got to worry about California falling off into the Pacific Ocean.
See, now, Mike, I feel you on the tectonic plate. I think about that every night that I go to sleep. At least we're not going to have any tectonic plates around here. But then I do look at Lake Michigan. I wonder at some point, is that thing going to come flying over the old Lakeshore Drive and we're just going to all be swallowed up? Isn't that gonna be a thing at some point here?
Is that why you bought all that land in Arizona and Nevada?
I think Rockford is a great spot right now. You're gonna be right on the coast in about, I don't know, 25 years, something along those lines. Mike,
there's an idea, Carm.
Yeah, no, okay. See, we're giving out the big ideas here Saturday on the beat. Mike, buy in Rockford now.
Look. The Lakers sell themselves.
Thanks, Mike.
The Lakers have been very bad, but I mean, they're a team that can sell themselves because of who they've been, you know? So, I mean, the Bulls at some point should be able to capitalize on that.
I'm about equity here. I'm about everybody having a fair shot. And this little sports time period is just, it's not working for me. The rich getting richer.
Mm-hmm.
The middle of the pack getting smaller. The lesser lights, even getting lesser. That's what it feels like.
Well, Manny Machado and his 318 average are with the Dodgers now, and the Cubs are just going to have to you know, put them away.
And the guy that the Cubs take away from the LA Dodgers, Yu Darvish, he's really not having the...
How about Morrow?
Well, I'll go. Brandon Morrow was a decent signing, but he's on the DL, and who knows what's going to be there. Do we have one more break we got to do here before news? And Dan, we do. All right. Adam Hoge will join us after the 4:30 news. We appreciate you calling, and sorry to those who we did not get to on this very deep, passionate
everything. Are you going to be all upset about Jared Goff, or are you going to be happy with Trubisky when we talk to Hoge?
I'm willing to be open about Mitchell Trubisky, Harry. Okay. I have an open mind. I have a lot of questions, though. A lot of Bears questions, training camp, getting going and all. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN.
You know, it's day one, and I was out there at practice, and I got to hit other guys, and that was fun. You know, I don't look much into psychological hurdles, but a physical hurdle, yes, it was. I had a lot going on this offseason. I'm just really happy to be out here.
That is Kyle Long of your Chicago Bears. You always know that football is coming around after the All-Star break in baseball. It always seems very early to me, Harry, but I walked in today, got it pretty early because I've been out of town this week. I was up in Boyne Mountain, Michigan with the
name dropper.
Yeah, it was awesome. You should have been there. Would love to go with you next year. Went to tennis camp. We're going to talk about that later with my new head coach, Bill Perlmutter, as I did try to make the high school team up there. I'll find out exactly if we did after 5 o'clock. Bill will be on the show. But training camp is a thing, and so that means football is here, and that means that our friend Adam Hoge is back doing double duty now, doing the White Sox and the Chicago Bears, and he joins us now on 720 WGN, The Beat. Hoagie, this is year two of Mitchell Trubisky, year one of Matt Nagy, year four of Ryan Pace, and my question to you is this going to be the year the Bears actually win more than six games?
I think it should be. I think it should be, guys. I think those are fair expectations. You know, you have a quarterback in place. Now, there's going to be speed bumps, no question about it. You have a first-year head coach. You have the first year that they're going to be under this much more complex offense. But the whole point of that offense being more complex, and this is a crazy theory, guys, I don't know if you agree, but it should be harder for opposing defenses to stop that more complex offense. And so that's kind of the whole point of this thing. I look, there's no question that already there's a different feeling in Bourbonnais. Both, I think, with the fan base and with the teammates of Mitch Trubisky, who clearly 100% believe in this guy. And I can tell the coaching staff and the front office, too. I would say there's a different vibe with Ryan Pace as well. I mean, there's just a trust in the quarterback. And when you have that, you have something going in the NFL. I mean, that's how this league works, especially when you have an offensive-minded head coach who's calling the plays and working very closely with that quarterback and getting the ball rolling. That's where, over the past, really, 15 years now in the NFL, we have seen the Super Bowl champions come from that kind of philosophy offensively from the head coach-quarterback relationship, and I think that's what the Bears are trying to recreate here.
I cannot wait to talk about the receivers and the tight end, but we got to start with the running backs. Jordan Howard is one of the best-kept secrets in the NFL, maybe even in Chicago.
Dude's great on Instagram. I highly recommend. I think it's JH24. Does a great job. Go on.
There you go. So how will they use the combo of 24 and 29, Howard and Cohen, this season?
Well, I don't think there's any question that it's going to be Howard more with the ball in his hands running it and Tariq Cohen more as a receiving type running back. I hope they find ways, and I think they will, to get both of them on the field at the same time. I mean, that was really something last year, and there's many parts of that offense that the Bears ran last year that was really, really frustrating to watch every single week. But this idea that those two couldn't really coexist on the field at the same time was really hard to swallow. And I can already tell Matt Nagy is drooling over the idea of using Tariq Cohen in this offense. So he's going to be involved. And that brings up basically your question, Harry, is what does that mean for Jordan Howard? Let's realize that, you know, Andy Reid's teams, it's not like they just forgot about the running back. I mean, the Chiefs had the leading rusher last year. They're going to run the football a lot under Matt Nagy, and that means handing the ball off to Jordan Howard, who has proven over the last 2 years that he can be a very good running back. I don't know if you put him at the elite level because he might not necessarily always be able to break away, and he's not the shiftiest running back of all time. But there's nothing wrong with having a guy who you know you can hand the ball off to, and he's going to get, you know, 1.5 yards on third and one or fourth and one, or pick up three when you need two. I mean, that is what Jordan Howard is really good at, and he does have the ability to pick up big chunks too at times. So he's still going to be a big part of his offense, no question. He's their number one running back, and you know, I would have to think he's going to have another big year.
So to finish my thought from a second ago, I walked in here today and I'm preparing for the show. And I'm talking to Harry. I'm sorry, I got a million things going on in this head. And I get Harry, I'm talking to you, and I get one of the producers walks into the room and says, Ed Obradovich is here to see you. He said that he thought, like, what they told me was that OB thought we had a show today, which OB was pulling the old leg of at the Carm. But OB was in studio here, Adam Hoge, and he's very nervous that the Bears are nervous/ and also hopeful that the Bears are going to hit a lot more and be not run practice the way John Fox did, not run practice the way Mark Trestman did. Now, this is the new NFL. There are lots of rules about this. What can you report as to how the physicality will be with this team?
We'll definitely find out if the talk is real tomorrow when the pads come on, because it'll be the first padded practice tomorrow in Bourbonnais. But so far what has been talked up is that it's going to be very physical. It's going to be more physical than we saw under John Fox, which was already what I thought was a significant step up from Mark Trestman, who you know, he might as well had flags being put on every single player out there, because he, you know, if you went to the ground, that was pretty much the only time you heard Mark Trestman yelling, was if anybody went to the ground, get off the ground. That's how paranoid he was, and how soft those camps were run. So John Fox came in, ramped it up a little bit. They had some live drills, but really, it was still a far cry from some of the certainly the old school training camps that Ed Obradovich went through, but even some of the other teams in the league that get a little bit more physical. Now, one of those teams has always been Andy Reid's teams, and we saw it in Philadelphia, we saw it in Kansas City, and that's what Matt Nagy's used to coaching under Andy Reid for as long as he has. So I think we are going to see a more physical camp, and of course, yeah, the question is, will that lead to more injuries? Look, that's always a fair question. I think the good news is the Bears really addressed this in the offseason. They have a new head athletic trainer in Andre Tucker this year. They made changes in that area, which we wondered if they would. They have a new strength and conditioning coach. So I'd rather have a team that's used to practicing physical and calcing up their bodies. That's how Matt Nagy put it. Are there going to be injuries? Sure, but every team has injuries. I don't know how it can get any worse than what the Bears have had the last 2 years with injuries, so they might as well try this more physical approach.
Adam, you can see how it's easy for Bears fans to look at the Chiefs and say, okay, you know, Trey Burton's going to be our Travis Kelce, and, you know, Allen Robinson, you know, is going to be the speedy wideout, and everybody's going to assign people to, you know, to match the Chiefs' offensive prowess. So how good can Trey Burton, who wasn't necessarily the main tight end on the Eagles, how good can Trey Burton be with Coach Nagy?
Yeah, it's. I'm glad you brought up that Travis Kelce comparison, because that's what everyone starts to do, and I'm sure, you know, Matt Nagy started even doing in his head day one when he took this job, was how do I take what I had in Kansas City and get it here, and that was the signing is Trey Burton. And I mean, Kelce's name even came up with Adam Shaheen in an interview I did with him a couple months ago. These guys want to be that good, but that's a pretty high bar. I mean, let's be realistic. I don't think the Bears are going to have a tight end as good as Travis Kelce this year.
No.
Nobody
in the league will.
Exactly. So you got to temper expectations a little bit. Now, can they get a guy that's a mismatch problem for opposing defenses that would get Allen Robinson open? Or will Allen Robinson, just his mere presence on the field, finally give somebody like the Bears had in Brandon Marshall, which was, oh, that dude needs to be double-teamed, and there's a guy in Alshon Jeffrey across the field that benefits? I mean, it's been a few years since we've seen that with the Bears. And, you know, the offensive coordinator last year said the one guy who got double-teamed, Tariq Cohen, he couldn't be on the field because he got double-teamed. I mean, that's the kind of stuff nonsense that we were dealing with last year. And so the whole idea is, you know, if they end up getting a tight end that's that good, great. And I do think Trey Burton's going to be a good addition here. And I do think Adam Shaheen, by the way, is going to take a step forward in year two. But more importantly, however it works out, maybe it's Tariq Cohen who's benefiting, or maybe he's the guy that's creating the mismatches. The point is there are so many more options on offense. And there is a quarterback here who I believe can read the field and process this offense. And again, there's going to be bumps along the way because it's brand new. But the whole idea here is to hit the guy who's open, whoever that guy is. It could be Deion Sims. By the way, Ryan Pace said yesterday in an Instagram story with Bears fans that Deion Sims is the Bears' most improved player.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but that was his answer when he was asked by a fan who's the most improved player.
Number 88, Deion Sims.
I thought it was a layup for the quarterback. But
Deion Sims is Deion rolling. Sim. All right. Yeah. By the way, it's Adam Hogue. It's Harry Tino. It's Mark Carmen. It's the Beat 720 WGN. I've heard whispers that Mitchell Trubisky is not the sharpest knife in the drawer, which you're talking about making decisions and all that stuff. Do you get that sense at all that we're not? Because quarterback, it's a position where being smart matters. I'm just wondering what you think about that, Hogue.
Yeah, I haven't heard that at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't know him well enough yet personally. I mean, to know what kind of street smarts the guy has. But no, I think everything we've heard over the last year, and I thought he proved it last year. By the way, with the lack of reps he was getting, he was clearly the best quarterback in Bourbonnais, and yet he was the third string quarterback getting less reps and was being brought along so slowly, didn't have many options. I thought the fact that he went out there under the conditions he did and, you know, he was week five when he was playing as a rookie, and he went out there on Monday Night Football and I thought processed everything really, really well. And I think the fact that he looked – again, I always go back to this. The fact that he looked so competent last year, yes, the numbers weren't great, but he was in a terrible offense and didn't have many weapons. He had no wide receivers. And he went out there, and the overwhelming thought when the season was over was, okay, he looks like he knows what he's doing. I mean, he looks competent. I think that's a huge win considering the conditions he was playing in last year.
Kirk Cousins deserves every penny the Vikings gave him. We already were in the division with Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. Now there's Kirk Cousins. I know we need to sign Mr. Smith, but how will the Bears put more pressure on opposing quarterbacks this year?
For me, this is obviously Trubisky's the number one question. It determines the whole direction of the organization. But beyond that, this is the biggest question for me, Harry, because I'm not a huge fan of what they did specifically at edge rusher because they didn't really do anything.
They didn't do anything, right.
I mean, they signed Aaron Lynch, and I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, but Aaron Lynch, I think, is now on his fourth injury since signing the team.
Would have been better off signing John Lynch.
I was going to say, of the Lynches, Aaron Lynch is low on the totem pole.
Yeah, I mean, they're expecting big things. He comes from Vic Fangio. I mean, but to me, this is the whole storyline we had with Marcus Cooper last year. Here's a guy, he wasn't used enough. Vic Fangio likes him, so the idea is they're bringing him here to Chicago, and he's going to be Fangio's guy, and he's going to fit in the defense and go. I mean, and then we saw what Marcus Cooper was, and I mean, he wasn't very good. So I don't know. Maybe Aaron Lynch will turn into something great. He's a huge, massive guy. I'll give him that, and he looks physically imposing, but you got to be on the field. We've learned that a lot here. So to me, they are one Leonard Floyd injury to me from being in the exact same spot they were with the wide receivers last year, which is a very scary thought to me.
Leonard Floyd has been in the league now. This is going on his third year, so that's 32 games that he could have played in. He's played in 22. So do the math there, Harry. That's roughly two out of every three. I went to the University of Iowa. Two out of three puts you on the field. Not enough at the end of the day.
Now, to be fair, the injury he suffered last year was friendly fire from Kyle Fuller.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean, that's the whole point. He was an undersized guy, and that was a fluke injury.
Well, year one was this guy's not ready. He's not physical enough. He's not big enough. I still think early last year you probably had some of the same thoughts, but you were also seeing progress. You were seeing raw ability to get after the quarterback. Then he takes a shot from Kyle Fuller in his knee, and it's like, what are you supposed to do about that? So if he has the same offseason he did a year ago, he should be that much stronger. He should be that much more physical and ready to absorb the it's a huge question, no question about it. But I think there is some optimism there that you can at least look at with Leonard Floyd.
Hey, before we let you go, and I'm dying to talk about Cody Parkey, who's an awesome signing, but before we let you go, I got to ask, any hoagies?
Well, I'll give you this one. We always talk about training camp heroes. Mm-hmm. We got a leader in the clubhouse. You guys know who Kevin Tolliver is.
Kevin Tolliver.
I love him. He's great. No, never heard of him. Go ahead.
He is an undrafted free agent out of LSU, defensive back. He's been playing corner. Matt Nagy says he looks more like a safety, but they got him playing at corner right now. And I think he already has 3 interceptions through 2 practices. And yesterday had a really nice one where he adjusted on the football last second, looked sort of a back shoulder. Looked like a wide receiver. He made a play that I haven't seen Kevin White make in 4 years. So, okay. So training camp hero here. We're only a couple days into this thing, but Kevin Tolliver is a name to keep in mind.
His entire family was out there yesterday. Is that the picture that I saw in the Tribune?
Yeah, there was a picture of that. They were all. I mean, that would have been today because today was the first one open.
Right, right.
To the public, but yeah, I saw that photo too.
Okay, the Tolliver family came strong for Kevin Tolliver,
and well, they should. And Hoagie gets to go to an extra preseason game this year.
That's huge. It's coming quick. What is it, August 2nd?
Yeah, we are less than 2 weeks away from the Bears and Ravens, and get ready for it now because what they do with the national anthem is going to be the national story.
Well, all right. I'm looking forward to it. Hoagie, new season. Can't wait to talk to you every week. You're the man.
Yeah, it's always fun. It's good that football's back.
Football, indeed, back. Adam, have a great
Bears.
Day.
Bears.
Thanks, guys.
Adam Hoagie covering the Bears. The Bears. The Bears are back, Harry. OB was here today. OB was walking around. He wanted to get his card. We got a new studio. I don't know if you've heard, we've moved studios.
Uh-huh.
OB wanted to make sure that he had his key card to be able to get in for day one. Think about that. In the middle of July.
So he came here on a day when most of the people that could give him the card wouldn't be in the office.
Well, he wanted to see me. That was his theory. He didn't say that. I don't really know if that's true. But
I like
that's what
it
I'm
that he
believe.
Was pulling your leg.
In which way?
That he said he wanted. He was here for a show, and there was no show.
Yeah, I really actually thought that OB thought there was like some training camp show today, which... He was just kidding around. All right. Huge, huge story coming up right after 5 o'clock. We'll tell you about it next, 720 WGN. Bill Perlmutter coming up after the 5 o'clock news here. Now, who is Coach Bill Perlmutter? Well,
who is Coach Bill Perlmutter?
Coach Bill Perlmutter is my new hero in life, Harry. He is the tennis coach at Boyne Mountain. I partook in the Boyne Mountain week-long tennis clinic along with my beautiful girlfriend, Chelsea.
As opposed to the ugly girlfriend which you left here.
Right. That's I don't know who you're talking about, but right. And we were the only adults in the program, Harry. It was us. And maybe like there was one adult straggler one day and another adult straggler another day. But for the 5 days of this camp.
There's like kids?
High school and junior high, yes.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable. But
would you go through 30 brochures before you found a camp that you guys could win a tournament at?
I got to go to break, and we're going to talk to Bill coming back here. But there's some phenomenal stories. And if you can hear this as I'm opening up my bag,
uh-huh.
What am I holding here, Harry? What am I holding?
It looks like a bong.
No, that would be a medal, buddy. See
oh,
that
medal?
Yes, that is a.
Is that gold medal?
If you want to watch the stream online, I'm putting it on right now. My tennis medal. Be right after the 5 o'clock news, right here on 720 WGN. Winos!
Chicago sports spoken here. The beat is on
720 WGN and WGNRadio.com.
507-720-WGN. Mark Harmon and Harry Tynowitz with you until 8:30 tonight. We've got White Sox Weekly coming up at 6:30. Harry, you taking any summer vacation trips this fine summer of ours?
So far, the only summer vacation trips I have taken have been to Guaranteed Rate and Wrigley Field and Arlington Park,
which are great vacations.
Right. I can't. I'm trying to get into the UP, but it's very hard to get in there.
Right. Well. So there was the All-Star break this week, slow time in sports, and I don't know if I've ever mentioned to you that I have this passion for tennis. Have I ever said anything about tennis to you?
Table tennis.
Yeah. That too, actually, but I prefer the phenomenal game of tennis. And we started looking around. I was looking around for a trip to take with Chelsea, and we looked out east to a resort by the name of Winter Green. And then I'm like, maybe we'll just keep it in the Midwest, stay local, be a drive away from you, Harry. And so I found, that's right, I wanted to come back and see you on a moment's notice. So I found up in northern Michigan, the Boyne Mountain, which is a ski resort. But it's also in the summertime, they got, I believe, 12 tennis courts. And they have a program in the summertime that's really for mostly kids, but it also allowed adults. So I thought that was a perfect opportunity, Harry, to reconnect with my youth.
Uh-huh.
And it was a five-day thing. We didn't make the full 5 days, but we were up there for a good four of them. Although we missed one to go up to Mackinac Island, which is a whole other story. And the guy who runs it is also the head coach of the Petoskey High School up there, the boys' men's tennis team, Coach Bill Perlmutter, who took me under his wing this week. And Coach Bill is actually taking time right now to join us on 720 WGN. Coach, it's been one day since I've been gone. I just want to let you know that I miss you, and I want to thank you. And it was a tremendous experience, and I feel like a better person after being underneath your tutelage for this week. And Harry is shaking his head. He feels very uncomfortable right now. But I just would like you to just know how much I appreciated it, and if you feel free to talk about how I got better and the effort that I gave every day, just to paint a picture for Harry of the determination that I showed.
Well, I guess we'll have to disappoint him and tell the truth. We're really a lot better for having you and Chelsea there that week. You guys both made the academy a better week, and it was our pleasure having you as much as you say it was yours. So it was a mutual.
Coach Bill, Carm said that there were kids there, and then he and Chelsea were also there. Does this happen a lot, that adults show up where the kids are? Do you get a lot of people Carm's age?
Yeah, we do. We get about, I'm going to tell you, it's 65 to 75% junior players, if you will, a lot of high school kids. So you know, these are young men, if you will, young women that are, you know, pretty sharp players. Mark had his work cut out for him, especially in the singles. Yeah, well, he did come out victorious in the doubles on Friday. I got to give him props for that.
I'm wearing my medal right now, Coach. I've got it on here. Tennis Academy 2018. You see what that says, Harry? Can you see? It starts with a C, and after that is a champion. Can you want to just read that out? It's a C. It says champion, Harry. You see that?
Oh, I see what that says.
Yeah. No, that was, it was in the doubles. I didn't fare as well in the singles, Coach. Which was,
well, you know, those young kids, they can run like grease lightning, you know that.
So did
you saw that firsthand, I should probably say.
So in the
doubles, did his girlfriend Chelsea carry the squad?
Actually, he played with your namesake, a young man from northern Michigan named Harry. And they came out on top.
Harry's going to be.
The good news is Harry was 6'3", so they couldn't lob over those guys with Harry there, that wingspan.
So somewhere in the world, every other Harry is like, you know, a physical specimen. Harry Connick Jr., Harry Belafonte. Then we get to me. So you don't offer a mixed doubles tournament there where Carm and Chelsea could have participated?
We did not have any mixed doubles that day. The day before, we actually did play quite a bit of mixed doubles. We do match play every day there at the academy. The Friday he's referring to, though, is a full day-long tournament with multiple matches of singles and doubles, because, you know, it's one thing to drill, but then you also need the actual match play to really hone those those drills and make them come to fruition.
So you drill all week, Harry, and then you lay it on the line on Friday. Honestly, does anything sound more fun? Coach, can we, I'm thinking people right now listening, 312-981-7200, who would like to be the next adult to join. You have two more weeks of the academy coming up here, right, if adults would like to join up at Boyne Mountain, which, Harry, they've got a...
Are we giving away a stay at Boyne Mountain?
I think maybe Coach would be willing to do something. I have no idea. I don't think he has quite that power, but maybe Bill would like give a discount on a lesson, something like that, wouldn't you, Coach?
Well, we might be able to do it. Maybe we could even do a two-for-one on a whole week at the academy if somebody wants to call in and sign up right now, I guess.
And
we would gladly do that.
And all your tennis questions, tennis tips, tennis, you know, will help you with your game. You want to know more about Mark's tennis life? Tennis talk.
It's a huge opportunity right now, Harry.
I picked the wrong week to give up sniffing glue.
So what would you do with a guy like Harry, Bill? Who let's be honest here. He's not the most athletic person you'd ever see.
Mm-hmm.
You do a nice walk and you do a good treadmill. But have you ever
elliptical?
Have you ever actually held a racket in your life?
Yes, I held a racket.
When's the last time?
Carm, I grew up with a tennis court in my backyard. Come on, Carm. You think my dad moved into a new house without figuring where we're going to have the kids' bar mitzvahs?
You had a tennis court in your backyard? Is that true?
I never told you that?
No.
Yes, well, we had a tennis court in our backyard.
Did you ever play?
Yes, I played.
And?
And one time I hit a ball so high it got stuck in the fence, so I had to go like into the wooded area behind our house. And on the way down, I thought I was stepping on a tree stump, but I was really stepping on a beehive.
Uh-huh.
And I had 19 bee stings.
Oh, well, that could impact the game. Bill, I thought the key thing that you were pointing out to myself and Chelsea and some of the other campers, tennis is, it's actually not about your arms and your hands and doing all the work up top, but it's actually about the feet. Isn't that right, Coach?
Tennis is a game of movement, and the philosophy at the academy is, and the way I coach in general is from the feet up and the head down. So definitely it's a game of movement. And if you ever listen to them, like when you watch Wimbledon or the upcoming U.S. Open around the Labor Day weekend, you'll hear them talk about, while this guy's moving up in the rankings, his movement, his fitness has gotten so much better. And you rarely hear them talk about, wow, look at the mechanics of his strokes. It's always about the movement, and that's always the sound that you hear. When you listen to and watch tennis, you can close your eyes, you're going to hear squeaking shoes 20, 30 times, and you'll hear one ball hit.
Well, you know, tennis, I would think with Mark, you'd want to coach from the feet up and stop at the neck. So it's really a great way to stay in shape, though. My dad played tennis a long time, and it's really a great way to stay active, to stay in shape. Are as many kids playing tennis today as there were 20 years ago?
Good question, Harry.
They're not. I would love to see more of it. They've moved into a lot of the contact sports, but I think we're starting to make some headway because people realize it's a very tough game, mentally, physically, and technically. So with traumatic brain injuries on the rise in the other sports and a lot of knees being lost, I think we're going to make some headway. But no, they're not. The sport's been diluted by things that when I was growing up, I don't know about you guys, but soccer wasn't nearly as big. Lacrosse wasn't there. There were no club high school rugby teams, which there are today in our area. And so that, you know, the breadth of various sports has diluted the overall numbers for tennis, but it's still a strong game to this day and a wonderful game.
With Carm leaving and after he won the doubles match, will you be renaming the doubles trophy the Mark Carman Trophy?
Good question.
Well, I would, except I'm going to help you out here, Harry, a little bit. Even though they were silver medals, Chelsea came home with two medals and Mark with just one.
That's true.
So we're going to keep the name the same for right now.
Did you hear that, Chelsea?
Chelsea came home with two medals.
Yes.
Was one from the high school boys?
No, she just she held her own on the court with the ladies and did a real nice job. And as I said, She, all truth be said, it was great having them there, and we had a ton of fun, and they both got better.
See that, Harry, the value that we brought. And by the way, Bill, on the ride home, Chelsea mentioned the fact that she had two medals about 10 times. And
I love it.
And people that are texting in, like the 870, is the Medal of Participation Award. That's not nice.
It's a participation trophy.
It was not a participation trophy. And another one is asking if I was playing tennis like Kramer, beating up on the little kids, which it was a little awkward at times. There
were you actually playing at this camp, or were you just the ball boy?
I was in the battle. It takes a certain, and Coach, I think you'd back me up on this, it takes a certain amount of self-confidence to willingly go out there and know that a 16-year-old is about to beat the living bejesus out of you, right?
Yep. These were no little kids. Like I said, these are young men, and they're faster than grease lightning, and they're good athletes. He won the gold medal fair and square, guys.
Yeah, that's right, Harry. All right, Coach. I'm working on getting another week off because I know the camp is 3 weeks. You have next week and another. All the kids were like, "You guys coming back next week?" Like, I gotta pay the bills, sir. We gotta work for a living.
Hey, Carmen, I'm online here. There's a place in North Pleasant, Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Yeah.
You could play tetherball against 6-year-olds. I smell another medal.
I do want to add to the collection. Coach, best of luck on the season for you guys. The Petoskey boys, I'm going to be following along here. And thank you for the tutelage, and I plan on... You know, Harry always kids me that I tend to play against Maury, who's 77, and Phil, who's 62. But this was a whole flip for me. So I thought that if anything else, Harry, you'd be impressed that I wasn't playing the older tennis generation, but yet the younger.
It's very good, Carm.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Coach, appreciate it. There you go. Our guy, Coach.
All right.
Yeah, we'll talk to you. Coach Bill Perlmutter up at Boyne Mountain, which is an incredible place to go for real. Skiing in the winter, tennis in the summer. They got zip lining, Harry.
I love zip lining.
Right?
And did you hear the story about the newlywed couple and the zip lining?
No, I did not.
Can I tell you that when we get back?
Sure, absolutely. Let's do that coming back here. 720 WGN. All right. We got the honeymooner zip line in Honduras. It's a terrible story.
This is the beat, seldom heard during the baseball season, the beat. Mark Carmen at the Carm, Harry Tynowitz at Hey Tweet Harry, White Sox Weekly at 6:30, then Andy Major's pregame, 8:35, Sox and the Mariners from the Great Northwest coming up at 9:05. So you were talking about in Michigan, not only was this a tennis camp, but they have places you could zip line.
On the resort, yeah.
So this week, this happened, a couple honeymooning, Israeli couple honeymooning. You know how on a honeymoon cruise they stop, or if you take a cruise, they'll stop in different ports of calls, and you get out and you do what's popular there. You shop or whatever. This couple got out in Honduras, and they ziplined. The wife got stuck. The husband slammed into her. And unfortunately, there was a fatality. The husband died.
That's awful.
It is awful, but on the other hand, it probably saved him about 20, 25 years of arguing.
Oh, my God.
What? Too soon?
Yeah, I think that might be a drop too soon, yes. It's always...
The wife is in stable condition.
It's always my complete terror when you look at going ziplining, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or parasailing or whatever, bungee jumping.
Yeah.
Like, is it really worth the risk reward of the 0.1% to do that when the downside is you may not be alive?
I thought the worst thing that could happen on a zip line, like the reason, you know, like what people wouldn't want a zip line is because they could fall off. It could snap. I can't imagine that you could have a collision with someone. That is horrifying, and my heart goes out to them, and it's a terrible way to go. And I mean, oh, my God, you're married. You spent your whole life trying to meet someone. You meet that person, And nowhere in the vows does it say, you know, crash into each other on a zip line. This is terrible. I bungee jumped once, and it was probably not worth it. I parasailed once. It was nowhere near as scary as bungee jumping. Bungee jumping is scary. Parasailing was fun. Bungee jumping was like, I'm an idiot.
See, I don't even find parasailing that fun. For a second, it's cool when you're going up, but then you're up there, you just sit there. You're up in the air. There's nothing to
but
do.
But it's like you're in a parachute.
Yeah, but
you're holding on to like a motorboat, and you know you think about, hey, what if I let go? What would happen?
I'd rather play tennis. I mean, it's just you're just sitting up. Like if I was going to do something like beach vacation, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to spend that money,
right, you could take a kayak, a boat,
right? Kayak, boat,
go
jet,
fishing,
jet ski.
Fishing is fun. We went trolling for mackerel.
Fishing, sure, but like jet ski, parasail, which one would you do? Like, to me, that's obvious. You do the jet ski, you fly around, it's fun. You're taking waves, you're doing all sorts of stuff.
Right, you're not leaving you're not going, you know, 200 feet in the air.
And like just sitting there. Like, what's the point? I don't get it.
You're flying, dude. You're flying. Where else will you ever be in the air by yourself, alone?
Why not just go up in a high building and go on the balcony and look out? Why not just drive up to the top of a mountain
because
and look
out? Because you're not... Imagine gliding over the city. Imagine gliding from, you know...
But you're not gliding over the city. You're just gliding over water, and you're just looking down. I don't...
No. I mean, like, okay, so I...
Maybe I have a lack of excitement in my life. Maybe I should just...
Pick a place. I mean, if you were in, you know, Hawaii, you know, you would be, like, you know, looking down on the beach on a dozen, you know, two dozen hotels and all the tourists and all the trees and all the volcanoes and all the beauty.
But the sensory, like, of racing a jet ski and hitting the water and flying over a wave, isn't that like 100 times better?
But you could do that in a car. You could be in a car racing along the street and, you know, going to one of these places like in Joliet where you can race cars 180 miles an hour.
That's fun.
That is fun. I'm not saying that's not. That's cool as hell, and you better be trained because that's not easy to do.
Right, but parasailing, you just sit there.
Carm, parasailing is really cool.
312-981-7200. Is Harry dead wrong about parasailing? This is a deep topic right here.
No, I mean, I
think you like it because you just get to sit there and hang out. That's my take. Harry likes it because it's a relaxing situation.
It's invigorating.
What am I missing?
It's not relaxing, Gilligan. It is invigorating.
Why Gilligan?
Do you understand? How are you missing this?
I don't know. I just don't get it. You sit there, your feet dangle, they bring you down, you touch the water, they bring you back up.
Imagine
$150.
Imagine parachuting.
Yeah, that's cool. You're coming down.
Okay.
Totally different.
Okay, now you go somewhere where they say, hey, we don't have parachuting, but we have parasailing.
Yeah, I'm good. No thanks.
You're missing it. Has anybody ever parasailed?
All right. 312-981-7200. Huge topic. 720 WGN. We got to get to news. Parasailing is the most overrated vacation activity in the history of vacation activities.
It's nowhere near as much fun as playing tennis against kids one quarter your age.
You're exactly right about that. 720 WGN. Seven twenty WGN extended ride here with Beat till 6:30. White Sox Weekly coming up an hour from now. Chuck Garfine will be on White Sox Weekly today. Ed Farmer will be on as well. Maybe another White Sox talented individual will join. By the way, it seemed very mixed reaction on the parasailing here, Harry. We got parasailing is awesome coming in. Love parasailing coming in on the text line. And then we've got some brilliant people who are texting and saying, Carmen is right. Parasailing is absolutely the most overrated vacation activity you can possibly do. So
again, I'm not saying it's the greatest vacation thing you can do, but I'm saying it's a lot different than you give me a choice of getting on a jet ski or parasailing. You could get on a boat, you could get in a car, you could have that thrill of racing along the surface, but parasailing puts you in the air.
Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
You don't get it.
Do they have parasailing on Lake Michigan? Can you do that out there?
I would hope.
I've never seen that being done. You know why?
Why?
Because people in this town are brilliant and they would never pay for it.
Eh, you've probably never seen people getting helicopter rides. I know they do that.
Well, but right, but I see helicopters in the air. I believe that helicopter rides do exist somewhere in the
area. You probably always think it's like a news chopper.
Well, yes, most times it is. But I know that you can go on a helicopter.
WGN TV has a news copter. I've seen it.
Have you ever been up in a copter?
No, I'd love to.
I've never done that. I would like to go in a helicopter. Feels a little more safe. You know, you're in a encased a little, whatever you would call the helicopter thingy, right?
The helicopter thingy.
What do they call that? The is that the vestibule?
I've been in a blimp.
You've been in a blimp for real?
Oh, yeah. Budweiser 1.
See, you're just cooler than I am.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you
no,
are.
I'm not.
I've never been invited into a blimp. How'd you get to go on a blimp? It's the life of Harry.
It's there was a time when I was more invited.
And you got it, and in that time period, you got invited on a blimp.
Yeah, and let me tell you something. There's moments on a blimp that are a little frightening.
Yeah?
But there's no door.
How did you get to be on a blimp? Can you tell me?
Because I was buddies with Budweiser, and Budweiser was a big sponsor. The nature of radio, Budweiser and Miller are two of the biggest sponsors, and so they would invite you on stuff.
So you jumped on the Budweiser blimp.
There was a sales guy, Tom O'Malley, wonderful guy, but he cheers for a bad football team.
And so you were to spend it over what?
We went up. It was like we drove, we drove like out by Joliet again. And we went on a blimp for like an hour. It was Bud One, Air Bud One or Bud One. We were up for about an hour. And it's kind of crazy. There's like open windows. And you're just like, you know. There's
open windows on a blimp?
Yeah.
So you're just hanging out, what, 1,000 feet up with an open window and living the dream?
Something like that. It's not like the blimp in the at the Bulls game either.
We got food on this blimp?
No.
No food.
It was just a ride.
Beverages? They got beverages?
They didn't have like a beverage cart. I suggested that they should at the time, but they did not have a beverage cart.
Bottled water?
There was nothing to consume. See, we were just like the attraction was you're up in the air in a blimp.
So what was better, the blimp or the parasail?
The blimp was cooler.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I would do that again. Given a choice, I would go on a blimp.
Mm. Mark, you don't see it all the time, but sometime you'll see parasailing on Lake Michigan from the 219.
There you go. Thank you, 219.
I've never seen it. I don't know if I can. I mean, I'm looking out right now. We can see beautiful Lake Michigan from our new studios here. I see boats going across. I see yachts hanging out. I see the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier. I don't see anybody floating around on the old parasail.
Have you been on the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier?
I've never done the Ferris wheel, but I appreciate it from a distance. Like, that seems like a nice, romantic thing to do. Get on the parasail or a nice thing to do with your kids. I get it. That seems like that's a great activity.
Our kid stood up, and my wife almost had a heart attack.
Wait, what?
Our kid stood up in the Ferris wheel. You're on the little gondola.
Yeah.
You know, you're in your own little car, and the doors are closed, but we were, like, on the top, and our kid stood up and is moving around, and my wife, like, ah!
So you guys were going back and forth because Reggie got up? Was it Reggie or Lucy?
I don't remember. I think we had three up till then.
And so you're saying that you were calm, Papa Harry, saying it's okay, walk around,
Well, you get a little nervous up there, but I just grabbed the kid. I just like, you know what, why don't I hold on to you while we're up here at the top of the Ferris wheel?
So they were excited. They wanted to look around and see the whole city.
Right, right, right. It's not the same excitement, though, like being at a Bears game.
Right. Well, let's hope there is some serious excitement at the Bears games this year. Fingers crossed.
Let's hope, Carm.
All right. Well, there is excitement. We can get back to sports here. There is excitement on the golf course.
Yes, in Scotland.
Golfers, this is your opportunity. 312-981-7200. He is tied for sixth right now. Four shots off the pace. Three rounds are in the books. Tiger Woods is 5 under par after shooting 5 under today. He was even through the first two rounds, and Tiger's been pretty poor in those first two rounds for a long time now. Gotten slightly better, but he made a big jump the first two rounds. Then he had a huge day three, which is a Tiger-esque, if you will, and he's in contention. And people are saying this could be the greatest story in the history of golf, Harry.
Well, it's the first time in 5 years that Tiger has played like this. And I understand Jordan Spieth, who's the defending champion, who walked away with the Claret Jug, dig me, Claret Jug last year. Jordan Spieth shot a better round today than Tiger did, but if Tiger is back, look out.
Jordan Spieth is your leader, for the record, at 9 under par. Xander Schauffele is also 9 under. Kevin Kisner, which is also an interesting story, at 9 under. So you got three golfers at 9 under. You got Kevin Chappelle, I believe that's how you say it, at 7 under par, pardon my golf. And there's a Francisco Molinari at
Molinari.
6.
Oh, he's great. He's been great.
Yeah, at 6 under. He also shot 6 under par today. People had huge days as the conditions turned favorable, Harry.
So Carmen and I are not big golf guys. You know, I would say I've got the four major sports covered, big horse racing guy, but I'm not a golf guy. How big is this that Tiger Woods played like this today? That's what I would ask. 312-981-7200. How big is this? And does this round indicate that Tiger's back?
Yeah, I mean, should the question really for me is, should I make a point of getting up tomorrow, clearing the calendar, and sitting down, let's watch the British Open. Let's feel the excitement of golf, which as far as it's right there with parasailing for me as absolute.
Wow, you're comparing the British Open to parasailing.
Yes, yes. And I will watch the Masters, and if anyone's listened to the beat over the years, that this has been documented many times. I will watch the Masters.
This might be bigger than the Masters. This is global, right? You understand that the Masters happens in Georgia, and that this is global. That this tournament brings out people from all over the world.
You think the British Open is bigger than the Masters?
I do. And I'll tell you the reason why. It's because obviously there's people playing on the PGA. There's people playing on the Pro Tour here that come from other countries, right? But I think this attracts people from everywhere, this one tournament. I think this is the oldest. I know this is the oldest tournament in the world, and I think that this is the biggest tournament. I think this is bigger than the Masters.
Well, okay. And we can have that discussion as well. Either way, they're both huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
To me, like the Masters, because you get the pimento cheese sandwich at the Masters for like $1.50. That
makes it the biggest tournament.
Well, that makes me want to go to Augusta, Georgia.
Well, I mean, the Green Jacket is cool,
right? And the Green Jacket and the Masters and Jack and Arnie and the whole thing, and just the way it sounds, yeah. When you hear Pat Summerall back in the day, the Masters, now with Jim Nantz, the Masters, it just, to me, that sounds the biggest.
The azaleas are in bloom,
right? Like if Steve Cochran, huge golf guy, Kevin Powell, huge golf guy.
Well, we should call Cochran and ask him which is bigger.
That's fine. We can call Steve. I don't know if we'll pick up our call on Saturday, but I would love to.
Let's call Cochran.
Does Dan Long, do you have Steve Cochran's number in there? Is that a
problem? That would be bad Cochran's number.
That would be bad, but you know, see if we can wake up Steve Cochran or bother Steve Cochran on Saturday.
Wake
afternoon.
Him up.
Well, maybe he needs a nap on the weekends. I don't know. It's a rainy day. He could be taking a nap.
I know he gets up early for his show, but I don't think like 5:45 he's taking a nap on a Saturday.
Well, I think 5:45 on a Saturday is a great nap time. You wake up then after you're done, you go have a nice dinner. Maybe you see a little, you know, do a hairy night, see a movie. Perfect nap time, lay down to Saturday, put the beat on, enjoy a little radio, fall asleep, wake up, we're still talking. It's a beautiful thing right there.
Right.
Painting a picture. To me, golf is just way more interesting when Tiger's involved. So maybe
I couldn't agree more.
Right?
I mean, for people that love Tiger, they want to see Tiger in there winning it. Then there's other people that want to just see Tiger. You know, some people view Tiger as wearing the white hat. Some people view him as wearing the black hat, and that is not a color thing at all. I'm just saying that anytime, you know, my favorite day to watch golf is the last day. And I'd rather have it close, whoever's playing, than have some guy up by 7 or 8 strokes.
Right.
If Tiger is in it, it's 100 times more exciting. Right. The ratings tomorrow will be spectacular because Tiger Woods.
Tiger built golf courses. He got golf into the mainstream. Nike became a huge player.
Tiger spent more days at number one. Tiger spent like, okay, the person that spent the most days at number one besides Tiger is like 7 years behind Tiger. That's how great Tiger Woods was. That's how much he dominated. That he was number one for 7 years longer than anybody, like 364 weeks longer, roughly, than any other golfer ever.
But he hasn't won since 2008.
Since the wife attacked him.
Are we blaming
We're blaming, well, I mean, he had an extramarital affair.
Multiple.
Yes.
And allegedly. I have to say that? Probably don't.
The one where his wife went running after him and hit him with a four-wood on the side of the car. And that's a bad selection. Everyone knows she should have, you know, hit driver. She, you know, went after Tiger, and Tiger's dealt with all kinds of injuries, right? He had back surgery.
He's had numerous problems physically, back, knee, all sorts of issues. And I think even more so than physically, I think mentally, he's had to rework himself and deal with a guy that literally was never had anything but I'm the best player and I always come through when it matters to now I am scuffling to make cuts. I mean, that's a huge, huge adjustment as far as mentality, right? You're used to being able to do it at any time, and then all of a sudden, you're very mortal. That's a big time change.
I mean, he's by far the greatest golfer ever, and he's the greatest golfer in the sport. He dominates. And then all of a sudden, one day, he's just a run of the mill guy.
312-981-7200. Simple question, text line or phone line. Are you paying attention to the British Open? Have you noticed? Is this piquing your interest that Tiger is doing it? I just want to take a temperature here. I'd like to know if people are, because, I mean, Ian O'Connor's writing that this could be the biggest story in the history of golf.
I'm with him. I'm not a golf aficionado, but I'm with him. If we could get Cochran on.
It's kind of an old story. The whole Tiger, you know, will he, won't he? Like, at some point, everyone gotten exhausted by it?
He had 14. See, I know the numbers. I shouldn't even know the numbers. But Cochran, you know, would verify that this is the biggest tournament. So we got another thing that we got to clear up is the British bigger than the Masters? And how big is this for golf? I'm telling you, the numbers tomorrow are going to be through the roof, even though it's an early, early start in the U.S. of A.
312 texting, it's big. Carm, it's known as the Open. No British, no nothing. Just the Open. It's like the Madonna of golf. One name. My bad. I got you, 312. We will never. You're right about that, and I knew that, but it somehow slipped my mind that it's no longer the British Open here. It's just the Open. The Open. It's like,
well, they were, I mean, technically it's the British Open, but you know, and it's always played over there, but they do refer to it as the Open.
Okay, right, the Open. It's kind of like when
it could be in
Timberlake.
Scotland, it could be in Ireland, it could be in England, but it's the Open.
It's like when Timberlake said in The Social Network, drop the just Facebook.
Yes.
Drop the British, just the Open.
He did say that.
Let's see here. 331. I got talked into attending a British Open watching party today. You got it wrong, sir. It's not the British Open. You got talked into, I'll correct you, attending the Open watching party today. I haven't golfed in two decades, but watching Tiger today, I think I'm catching the bug again.
It's because it's catchable with Tiger Woods.
But that's like terrible for the sport, right? The only thing that
Carm, your sport that you love, tennis,
yeah,
is to me, it's,
why are you defending golf? This is interesting.
I'm not defending. You're reading this wrong. I'm not defending golf. I'm saying that Tiger Woods is he's right there with Michael Jordan. If we looked up Sports Illustrated covers, now I bet you Tiger is second to Michael.
Okay, now I'm really offended, but okay.
Okay, I'm telling you. Okay, Michael's been on the cover of SI the most, right?
The greatest athlete to ever play anything, yes?
For years, you know who it was, of course. Growing up, there was one guy that had by far the most amount of...
Muhammad Ali. Right.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Then Michael came along, and Michael rightfully passed him. Michael Jordan's the greatest player ever, okay? In any sport, greatest player ever. Tiger Woods is at a level where you could find Michael Jordan. Wait, you're offended?
Yes, but I'm giving you facts. I'm letting it just meander around me.
So Tiger Woods has 14 majors won.
Right.
Okay, the record is 18.
Yeah, that
by right by the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
So, Carm, why are you offended?
Oh, Jennings, settle
down.
Thank
you, Dave.
It's just a simple question. Why are you offended?
Because I have because Mike's the best, and Tiger has had 10 years of doing nothing. That would never have happened in a Jordan-esque golf career. We got to take a quick time out so we get to your news in a second here. David Jennings, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Comparing Michael Jordan to Tiger Woods.
It's not what we're doing.
It's somewhat what you're doing.
I'm saying that he deserves to be on the most... You can understand why Tiger would be right behind Michael on Sports Illustrated covers.
Harry, there's one thing you haven't mentioned yet, and that is because it is so rare, or was, to see a black face winning major golf tournaments. When Tiger showed up, it was like, wow, who is this guy?
Well, so, okay, along those lines, Serena Williams, Tiger Woods. Serena Williams goes and has a baby and comes back and is playing in Grand Slam finals. Tiger Woods has extramarital stuff and his career is over for 10 years.
Right.
You can't. I'm sorry. He was supposed to be the greatest golfer of all time. He's still four.
But you can't take away what he's already accomplished.
I'm not trying to take it. I'm not taking anything away. 14 Grand Slams. Jack's got 18. He's four back, and it'll be a miracle if he wins one more. So he's not the greatest golfer of all time. So you can't compare somebody, in my mind, who's not the greatest as his sport with MJ. He could have been, but he blew it. I don't know how he blew it. It was guaranteed that he was going to pass Jack, and somehow, some way, he self-imploded. And we're still wait. Maybe he'll do it. Maybe he won't do it. And that's fine. I hope he does. I hope he wins another one. But like, we got to take the whole body of work here. At the end of the day, he's a phenomenal story. He's a phenomenal golfer, and he should have been the greatest golfer of all time. But I don't think you could call him even the greatest golfer of all time.
Well, I mean,
how could you?
How could you? Because I'll tell you exactly how you can do it. By how many weeks he spent at number one. He spent more than 7 years more than the guy who had the second most.
Right, but at the end of the day, it's titles. I mean, more than in any sport. Like in basketball or baseball or football, like that's a team game. So if you're playing with less than stellar talent, you don't win, it shouldn't count against you. But in golf, it should. All right. Tiger versus Michael. Serena versus Michael would be a better comparison. Quick timeout, news on time, 720 WGN.
This is my kingdom come. This is now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
Six o'clock hour, 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. White Sox Weekly coming up at the bottom of the hour. My name is Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynowitz. Great to have you on board. The Chicago Bulls have a new basketball superstar. Okay, I just overstated that. The Chicago Bulls have a new contributing member to the ball club. Let's bring in Vincent Goodwill, NBC Sports Chicago, who is one of my favorites, and perhaps yours as well, who does a great job covering the team. Hey, before we talk Jabari, Vincent, Harry and I were just having a discussion about Tiger Woods and the British Open, actually the Open, let me correct myself, and somehow Harry brought up that he's basically Michael Jordan, and I found that to be offensive.
You're taking me out of context.
That's okay. I'm willing to do that. How did I take you out of context?
I don't think he's as – okay, I'm saying I understand why Tiger Woods would be behind Michael Jordan in Sports Illustrated covers but ahead of other people.
Okay, so basically just comparing the two as stellar athletes. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think you could make a case for at one point in Tiger's career. I mean, when he did the Tiger Slam, what was it, 2001 – I mean, you can make the case that he played golf at such a level that was only comparable to Michael Jordan. And to say this, and I'm no golf expert because I'm ambidextrous and cannot figure out which hand to actually swing with,
uh-huh.
But what I will say is that golf courses were Tiger-proofed. NBA teams were not Jordan-proofed.
That's an interesting thing.
I like that, Vincent. That's solid. I understand why, when you look at the number of Sports Illustrated covers, you know, why there's Jordan, there's Ali, there's Tiger, and then there's everybody else. And I just think that if Tiger Woods, you know, today he came back. Today Tiger was 5 under, and because of that, I want to watch the British Open tomorrow. And I bet I'm not the only person in America that feels that way. I'm not a golf fan, but I want to watch because Tiger is in the hunt. So I think, therefore, that, you know, you could say Tiger is like Michael Jordan in that if he is alive and kicking, people will watch.
I agree with that one. I will say that they both have the ability to bring in the casual fan. Like, they both have a certain force of presence that when they're in it and they're on, or they're, you know, they're doing something relevant, that is going to bring non-golf, non-basketball fans on because they're such, you know, compelling figures. If someone said, hey, Michael Jordan is going to give a sit-down interview tomorrow, how many I hate the NBA guy will watch that? In the same way, the people who don't like golf, who are not traditional golf watchers, if you get the alert on the ticker at the bottom of your screen, Tiger 2 shots back, I don't care what you're doing, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to tune in just for the spectacle, just for the force of personality, and that kind of transcends their respective sports.
That is all true. There's no doubt. If Tiger's in it tomorrow, are you going to get up and watch? Are you going to watch the Open tomorrow? Will you get up earlier specifically to watch golf?
I didn't even get up to watch the royal wedding. You were just playing in my background. It just depends on how much I drink tonight.
Very fair answer.
Right. You know, I don't think people get up for the royal wedding. I think they kind of come to.
That's a good way of putting it, too. All right, let's talk Jabari here, Vincent. The Bulls apparently have liked Jabari for a long time. Chicago guy, Simeon, Derrick Rose, the whole thing. Two ACL tears of the left knee. Been playing for Milwaukee. The Bucks were not going to pay him. The Bulls jumped in there. Everybody knows the story by now. But people are debating good or bad for the Bulls. Another young guy who needs the basketball. Perhaps is not going to play any great level of defense. And you're also playing him out of position with the roster. Do you like it?
From the standpoint of not wanting to cover a boring team next year and wanting to cover something that's compelling. You're talking to someone who found the Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo year, one of the most compelling seasons of Bulls basketball since I've been here. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask in terms of that because, I mean, I'm selfish. But I will say, from the standpoint of being a Bulls fan, the question I have is, and you're talking to someone who likes Jabari Parker, who thinks that although he might have come a decade too late in terms of, you know, his ideal value for an NBA, you know, franchise and everything else, given gifts, that he can still be very effective. The question I have for Bulls fans is this. What would constitute actual progress going forward, having Jabari Parker in a Bulls uniform this season? And if it means he's having a good year and you want to bring him back next year for another $20 million, what does that mean long term? You know, as a franchise that's trying to move forward, I don't know if the answer to that is just that he fits. You know, because just the position that he plays, the injuries that he's had, you know, the worry that you have to have as a franchise, I don't know how things fit moving forward aside from giving you guys a temporary sort of jolt. But from in terms of development, you know, that's where I have to.
Right. I just look at it to try to answer your question there as far as what constitutes success. I would say that the team makes the playoffs, that somehow, some way, Fred Hoiberg is able to incorporate Jabari into the mix, and the team actually looks like they're playing together, that it's not going to be an easy task. And they look like they're actually haven't reached their peak, that there's more that could come, I mean, which to me is that this season actually becomes a huge referendum on Fred Hoiberg and whether he can put the pieces together. And no easy task here, but they have more talent. They should win more games. And I know you don't think they're a playoff team, but they should at least be in the mix. So to me, it's like, okay, Fred, let's see what you can do. And if you can't, then you're not going to be here. I think there's a lot more on Fred's plate as far as expectations. Would you agree?
Oh, I definitely think there's a lot on Fred's plate. And I certainly will think that when this type of roster is put together, you know, Gar Forman and John Paxson are suddenly looking at Fred and saying, hey, make some chicken salad out of this. Not that it's chicken bleep, but it's, you know, it's making applesauce out of pineapples. I don't know if Fred is capable of doing that, or really any coach, you know, to the level of expectations. I mean, it's just, you have a lot of scorers on the roster. You have a lot of guys who are still ascending. And the questions I always have whenever young, talented teams are put together is, if it's a question of fit, that's one thing. But if it's a question of young guys not necessarily being completely established in the NBA, who's going to sacrifice that for the greater good? And I think that's really hard to ask of players. And I think it's, I won't say it's hard to ask a coach to figure that out. I just think it goes against everybody's competitive nature. And you saying that they're going to make the playoffs, I think, Con, you're living in a pipe dream. But I understand the level of optimism given the level of talent. I just don't know if it's going to fit with talent and coaching, cohesiveness, defense, you know what I'm saying, point guard play, all these different things and practicality that you really need to make the playoffs, aside from just looking and saying, man, talented guy, talented guy, talented guy, talented guy, Eastern Conference, they're going to make the playoffs.
Vincent, we waited for most of the season last year. Will Zach LaVine come back from his injury? How good will he be? And, you know, we think he's going to be better this year because he's had more time. Jabari Parker's had two now, two of these bad injuries. What percentage do you think he will be? Do you think he's going to be 100% Jabari Parker? Are we going to get him at 80%? How much will he be back?
I think it's, unless you have like a you know, one of those Madam Cleo hookups in your man room or something. I think it's really hard to project how a guy with two ACLs on the same knee is going to perform. The crazy thing is, after the first ACL, and he came back and he played me at that career high year where he averaged 20.6 rebounds, 3 assists, he looked far more explosive after the first ACL than he did before the first ACL, and that never happened. So after the second one, you know, he had his moments, you know, the last month and a half of the season, you know, so it's kind of hard to say that his body is going to hold up when in 4 years you've had two ACLs that kind of averages out to 1 year. And I'm not wishing that on Jabari because I think he's a great kid. I think he's a talented player. But to project and say that he's going to stay completely healthy this year, I don't know if you can say that with any real evidence besides saying that you're hoping for that. Now, you can also say that Jabari's going to score, and he's going to give you 20, and he's going to score in a variety of ways, and you can get his history. You don't have to be a homer to say that, but to say how that fits in the context of winning and say how that fits in the context of availability, nobody knows.
So, all right, Vincent Goodwill, NBC Sports Chicago with us here, 720 WGN. Did you think that signing Zach LaVine was the right move?
Yeah, I do. I came into the last season feeling that the Bulls put themselves in a situation, not Zach. That when you trade for a guy like Zach LaVine, who was the third guy in Minneapolis and was coming off of ACL, and you're trading Jimmy Butler, there was nothing that Zach was going to be able to do medically that was going to justify in your mind whatever was going to happen in free agency. So, for me, I think Zach basically played to a certain level of his own expectations, and, of course, defensively and everything else. But, you know, to me, the contract isn't terrible. He's like 10th in terms of salary at his position, and that's before Klay Thompson's next contract kicks in. That's before Jimmy Butler's next contract kicks in, and the cap rises again next season. If he's a middle-of-the-pack player at his position and he can outperform or play up to his contract, I don't see how anybody can realistically say that this is a thing, this is something that you shouldn't have done when you knew you weren't going to see the best of Zach LaVine last year, and you were led to say that you're going to see a better product this year on both ends of the floor with better talent and better health.
What did you think of the Bulls draft picks this year?
I was actually one of those people who was on board with Wendell Carter Jr. before they actually drafted him. And I thought, had there been a chance for the Bulls to take Jaren Jackson Jr., I could see that. But Mo Bamba, I had some questions about just given his base and how I think he could kind of get moved around a little bit in the post. And there were a couple other guys, Michael Porter Jr., who people thought the Bulls might have been really high on. That turned out to be a little bit of a smokescreen. But I liked Wendell Carter Jr. because of all the high-maintenance guys on this team, you know, guys who need the ball, guys who you have to worry about, Wendell Carter Jr. is not one of those guys, and I think he's going to be able to develop, especially defensively, and I think there's a certain level of dependability that you're going to need on this team. Even though he's a rookie, I think he's going to fit in with that. And, you know, as far as Chandler Hutchinson, it's hard to say because Summer League is so different than real basketball. You can see he excels, you know, in the open floor, but will he have that opportunity to actually excel in the open floor, take the ball off the glass, go end-to-end in his rookie year, along with the fact that the Bulls seem to have zeroed in on him very early in the pre-draft process. That seems to always leave you open to some second and third guessing if the player does not turn out to be what you think he is.
Let me ask you one Chris Dunn question here, Vincent Goodwill. There's been reports out there, Joe Colley, the Sun-Times had it, that he doesn't like to be in the gym, and the Bulls weren't thrilled about his work ethic, and the Bulls denied that, which I don't think they would ever confirm. Yeah, that's exactly right. We don't like Chris Dunn's work ethic. I've talked to some people who say that he doesn't like to be in the gym, and that... you know, he's kind of, which is more like the new age NBA, that guys perhaps like to live the life and not exactly do what the old school guys did in the summertime. What are you hearing about Chris Dunn?
Well, I think, you know, when the report from Joe Colley came out, I believe that was sometime like early June or maybe even late May. And my feeling on that is simply that it's late May or early June. And I'm not expecting guys to be fully immersed in off-season basketball when the season ended in middle of April. You know, so I would want guys to, okay, yeah, you can pop your head in and everything else, but I'm not looking for you to be fully immersed into off-season basketball at that point or preparing for the next season. If you are, great, but I'm not going to hold it against you at that, you know, at that point. I talked to a couple people, and they say, look, if the way that he's working now is the way that he's working 2 weeks before training camp, then we had a problem. And to me, that's exactly, you know, how I would feel. Like, if he's not embracing the competition, if he's not embracing, you know, this opportunity and really taking advantage of it and moving forward, I think that it will bear out very early in the season with the way that his teammates trust him or don't trust him, in a way the coaching staff trusts him or doesn't trust him. Certain things I don't necessarily worry about from a media standpoint, because I think it's going to bear itself out and show itself in the season soon enough. So a lot of the speculation doesn't really much hold water, because we'll figure that out in October.
To move this interview full circle, we began with Jabari. I'd like to go back to Jabari here at the end. Everything I don't like about Lonzo Ball, I like about Sonny Parker. And Jabari Parker wasn't going to go to the U of I, but he wanted to be a Chicago Bull. I like it when guys want to play for my favorite team, when they realize how great an opportunity Chicago is. What did you think of Jabari defending D. Rose at the press conference and saying, ho, 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 D. Rose is a legend?
Well, I think, and I say this without any malice, but I think there is a large gap between how Chicagoans feel about Derrick Rose, African-American Chicagoans feel about Derrick Rose, and a traditionally mostly white media feels about Derrick Rose and his role. And I don't say that as a racism thing. I just think it depends on the view that you have, where a lot of people in Chicago view Derrick Rose as getting to the NBA as a massive success. It didn't matter if he won MVP, rookie of the year, Adidas contract, or whatever. Him simply getting there, not even being the first pick, but him getting there, was a massive success on so many different levels, because so much was put and invested in him, and there hadn't been a Chicago guy in a very long time before him. There's been guys since, but there haven't been guys like that, you know, before him in that way that Chicago put their energy towards. So to that degree, Jabari Parker looks at Derrick Rose as kind of like an OG, so to speak, or an idol. And you can see that's the way that he admired him and still admires him and everything else. And a lot of people take umbrage with the way that Derrick Rose has been, you know, portrayed in the media, you know, over the years with, you know, with his biggest sin, you know, his biggest proven sin has been getting hurt. And Jabari Parker is someone who's gotten hurt. That's going to sting with him a whole lot more, you know, on a number of different levels. So he was going to defend him. I didn't think the question was malicious, but I think whenever you're asking a question about Derrick Rose to a Chicago guy from a media standpoint, you better be exactly, precisely certain with the tone and the words that you're asking. Otherwise, you're going to get that type of answer.
Yep.
Oh, that's an awesome perspective. You know, you are Nick Friedell with the wardrobe. You are.
Oh, my God. Nick Friedell has better hair than me, and there's not many people I can say that about.
You know, I love the fact that D. Rose has not let all this success get to his head. And I know he's dealt with a lot of, people, you get injured, you're fragile. I mean, he really can't control that. You know, I don't think that's his destiny. I think that's bad luck that he gets hurt like that. I love that answer, Vincent.
Youngest MVP in the history of the league. Now, he probably shouldn't have won it that year, should have gone to LeBron. But regardless, he did win it. And, you can't fault the guy for getting hurt. And the narrative around Derrick Rose in this town, it just flat out confuses me. Came from one of the roughest parts of the city. He became an MVP. He took the Bulls to the Eastern Conference Finals. He got hurt.
Unusual family situation.
And people want to blame his brother, and people want to say that he's soft. You do what Derrick Rose did. You rise yourself from that situation, get to the NBA and win MVP, then you can start calling people soft. That's just how I see it. All right.
I agree.
Yeah.
And he's the third best player, I would say, to ever come out of Chicago.
So Isaiah, Frank Mark Aguirre.
Isaiah and then Dwayne Wade.
Isaiah then Wade. Interesting. Okay. Mark Aguirre was a hell, you know, that's a big-time talent.
It was a great shooter.
Well, he number two overall draft pick. I mean, but D. Wade did have a better career. I can't argue that. Okay, fair enough. We got a break. Vincent, you're the best.
Aguirre went ahead of Isaiah, right? If they had taken Isaiah, they would have been better off.
Was that the same draft?
Yeah, Dallas took Isaiah. I mean, Dallas takes Isaiah. They're much better off than taking Mark Aguirre.
The one guy who knows when Isaiah and Aguirre got drafted, it would be Vincent Goodwill, who I think is gets a Christmas card from Isaiah every year. Isn't that right? Don't you get a Christmas card from Zeke?
No, I don't get a Christmas card, but trust me, every time I say something nice about Michael Jordan, I get a meme.
Appreciate you, Vincent. You're the man.
Hey, take it easy, guys.
All right, Vincent Goodwill, NBC Sports Chicago, a little hoop talk, quick timeout, White Sox Weekly coming up, 720 WGN.